You're listening to The Mark White Show.
That's a good how do you do.
The summer is heating up. Have your next backyard celebration with TNT Fireworks. TNTFireworks.com. Have safe family fun with TNT Fireworks.
Sometimes life brings you a moment you always will remember. Some of nature's most beautiful creations framed by places we know and cherish. And aren't we in luck that some of life's most memorable scenes are right here at home, all together at Alabama the Beautiful, the group on Facebook where the eye captures the moment, and it really does last forever.
Be sure to check out alabamathebeautifulmagazine.com.
With six convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their six convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes.
North Alabama is full of adventure. If you love food, we've got it. If you love festivals, we've got them. If you love the outdoors, we've got plenty of places to explore. Whatever you love, we're sure to have something for you. For all things North Alabama, check out northalabama.org.
Now, with clear seed peaches, tomatoes, and other fresh produce, J. Calvert Farms in Coleman, Alabama is ready to serve you. Located at 30 County Road 260, Coleman, Alabama, you can go to their website at jcalvertfarms.com and follow them on Facebook and Instagram at jcalvertfarms. Give them a call at 256-636-2752. That's J. Calvert Farms in Coleman, Alabama.
Hey, everybody, this is Daryl Worley, and you're listening to The Mark White Show. Hey, step up and make a difference like he does.
This is Nico Johnson from Andalusia, Alabama. Assistant football coach at University of Texas. Be where your feet are. You listen to The Mark White Show.
Hey, y'all, this is Jeff Foxworthy, and you, yeah, you can make a huge difference in somebody's life. You just may not have figured out how yet, and that's why you're listening to The Mark White Show.
Hi, I'm Crystal Gale, and you're listening to The Mark White Show, and one smile can make a difference.
Hello, I'm Gene Stallings, and this is the Mark White Show. Get off the sideline and get involved and make a difference in your community.
You are listening to the Mark White Show. My daddy is your host, Mark White.
Welcome to another edition of the Mark White Show as I come to you from Andalusia, Alabama. I'm very glad to have Lieutenant Colonel Jim James Lawrence with me today. We're going to talk about his background in the military. We're going to talk about his support of a very special effort that is the Vietnam Traveling Wall, the Memorial Wall, which I'm here for, and the various organizations that have come together to help put this very special effort together for our veterans. Welcome to the Mark White Show, Lieutenant Colonel Lawrence.
Thank you so much.
Glad to have you. We were just talking before the show about the fact that your background initially was an accountant with no intentions of being in the military.
Correct. I grew up on a farm about 14 miles east of here. We grew cotton, peanuts, corn, cane, and we had cattle and pigs, that sort of thing. I had no desire to be in the military, but I graduated high school in 1965, and I graduated Troy University in 1969. I had a degree in business administration and accounting, and I was working as a cost accountant with Great Northern Paper Company in Georgia when Uncle Sam decided he wanted my service in the military. So that's how I wound up in the Air Force, because I preferred that to being in the Army, Navy, or Marines.
Now, you went quickly past. You went to high school. You went to Troy University. Where did you go to high school? We're in Andalusia, right?
Yeah, I went to high school at Op High School. We're a big rivalry with Andalusia. It goes back many, many decades.
But here you see a coming together of people from Op and Andalusia for this very special effort that it's interesting for a guy like me or other people who did not serve. But for people who served to see names
and to recognize names of those that they served with and also recall memories. That is a very difficult situation, but it also can bring closure, and that's what you hope, right?
Correct, yeah. I became acquainted with John Vick here, and he got me into the Covington Veterans Foundation. I'm a proud member of that. I have a connection with the wall because I was a high school basketball player, and one of our players was James Stephen Stanley, and his name is on that wall out there. And but for the grace of God, I could have been on the that. Steve was drafted into the infantry in the Army, and he was killed there. And we had a couple of other guys from OP, Max Kersey there and Jimmy Darby there. And then there was a fourth guy from OP named John Wayne Hudgens, who was born in OP, but he moved to Oxford. His family moved to Oxford, and the military records show his home of record is Oxford, but he originated here. So on that wall that we're looking at, there are four names from my hometown. And it's kind of, it's not traumatic, but it is a very sobering experience for me to go and look at their name for having played basketball, especially with Steve Stanley, because he was a year behind me. And unfortunately, he did not make it out, and the other guys for other reasons didn't survive it. So all of us folks back in the 60s were subject to the draft, and I ended up in the Air Force going to pilot training because, quite frankly, I just didn't want to be in the Army, and that's what the Air Force had available. And so I went off to pilot training in Oklahoma, and I went back there as a flight instructor, and after 4 years I went overseas, trained into a C-130 cargo plane. And at the end of the Vietnam War, in April of 1975, my squadron was forward deployed. We had several airplanes and crews deployed to Thailand from Okinawa. And the job there in April of 75 was to fly into what was Saigon at the time. It's now Ho Chi Minh City. But as the communists were closing in, we were flying in and out of Saigon and picking up refugees and flying them to Clark Air Base in the Philippines or to Anderson Air Base in Guam. And then, of course, they would be put on bigger jets and flown stateside here. And a lot of the bases, military bases, such as Maxwell Air Force Base, Montgomery, and Eglin Air Force Base in Northwest Florida, they had tent cities. And it was really crowded, but that's where a lot of the Vietnamese refugees were brought into. And it wasn't quite like the immigration flow we have right now, but this was all planned. And that's what my squadron was doing in April of 1975. And it was kind of dicey going in and out because you would go overhead Saigon because of the threat, the enemy threat. They were closing in so fast on Tonsonut Air Base that you would fly overhead at 15,000 feet at night, and then you would just do a corkscrew descent, and you would try to make sure that you did not extend beyond the perimeter of the base there. Otherwise, you might get shot down. So they were a little tricky things, but that was my association with as close as I came to being in Vietnam. I'm a Vietnam era veteran. And of course I went on, and I was in the Air Force 26 years and 4 months total, and I flew several other different aircraft. I flew an attack AC-130 Spectre gunship down at Hurlburt Field in Northwest Florida. I flew search and rescue C-130s at Eglin Air Force Base. I guess the most significant thing I participated in was on the 4th of November, 1979, the Iranians had a revolution where they, as part of that, they took Americans hostage in Tehran. So we flew to Guam secretly, and we trained to go into Iran to try to rescue those American hostages. And on April 24th and 25th of 1980, the Operation Eagle Claw was underway, and we had a terrible accident in the desert, where a helicopter crashed into a C-130 and we lost 8 lives there. So it was, one of the guys was a friend of mine was a navigator, Richard Bakke. He lived in my neighborhood, and my office, we shared the same office, and his desk was very near mine, and he perished in it. But it was kind of a traumatic thing, because that was one of the big things that we were training for, and my job would have been to fly overhead and protect the ground forces that were going to go, were going to break into the American embassy and liberate the hostages. But unfortunately, that didn't happen, and so it was a big failure. But there's been a lot of progress made in special operations since then, because we learned we need to have that.
And Jim, you make a great point for people to consider. You've talked about a teammate that passed away. You've talked about someone who was nearby, that lived nearby, that was a neighbor that passed away. These are brothers. These are neighbors. These are teammates. These are opposing teammates. These are people that you know, that you're connected with when a community has that draft or they have to be called to war. And this was not something that we weren't familiar with in this country, because World War I veterans were in their 70s at this time. You're talking about World War II veterans who are still pretty young, Korean veterans who are very young, that all these generations have had to experience this. And so they know for a fact, these older gentlemen especially, and the ladies that were there serving, they know what you all are bound for because they experienced it.
Yes. It's almost like a brotherhood, but it doesn't matter what era you're in, which war. When you see that men and women lose their lives in combat or associated activities, you can feel an empathy for them because you've been close to it. As I said, one of the high school guys, his name is on that wall. I was out here yesterday. As soon as the wall went up, I came over and looked on his panel in his line and made a photograph of it and shared it with my friends. And you just don't forget those things. I was at Hurlburt Field quite a while. I flew there, and then I came back in an academic situation where we were teaching school at a special operations school. And periodically we would have a crash or lose lives. In 1991, we lost 14 men on Flight Spirit 03. It was over Kafji. They were flying these gunships supporting the Marines, and they were shot down by an Iraqi missile. And it took weeks to recover the plane because we couldn't find it for a while. It was in the water. And we never recovered all the bodies. We recovered 5 of the 14 that were lost. But I remember that day very vividly because it was very somber on the base when it was announced that a plane had gone down and there were 14 missing. And, of course, later on, they were all pronounced dead. And that was in January of 91. In March of 94, we had another plane go down, another gunship, and there were 6 men that survived, but there were 8 that did not. And some of those men that went in the water off the coast of Kenya, they had flown on my air crew. And that was another very somber day. So all of us veterans, when those type things happen, we feel a lot of pain in our chest. And it's just, I just remember those two events, and I remember how the base, things were very quiet at the base. It was a very somber feeling because we're all in the same brotherhood, and we feel it when fellow aviators are lost. And because you're talking about families, you're talking about mothers and fathers, you're talking about wives and children, nieces and nephews, and the families are, it's a big effect on all of them when you lose lives. The entire base, it's like a big family.
You know, Jim, most of my listeners would probably know that the Korean War is called the Forgotten War. Right now, we have honoring veteran legacies out of Huntsville, Alabama, that are in Washington, D.C. right now as Korean veterans are being honored, and their wall has now been established. So we have the Vietnam Wall, the Traveling Wall in Andalusia. We now have a wall erected in Washington, D.C. to honor our Korean veterans, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
I think so, too. Now, I was not aware that there was a Korean Wall. I've seen the display they had with the guys with the the rain gear on, the statues and that sort of thing. But I was not aware that they have a wall, but I think it's wonderful.
They had the ceremony yesterday, and it has now been presented. They had Korean veterans in the audience to present this wall for them. And our veterans from Alabama, our Korean veterans, were able to be there, travel up. And, you know, Korean War veterans in their 90s now,
right,
they made it to Washington, D.C., the ones that could.
They're thinning out the ranks.
They are. And our World War II veterans are quickly passing. We had Sherwin Callender that just passed away this week. I went to his 102nd birthday in June.
Yeah.
And his health gradually went down over the past month, and he passed away. Sherwin Callender served in World War II. We've lost a lot of our men that were part of honoring veteran legacies. But here's the thing. We've got to capture that experience while they're around. We don't really have any excuse if they're available to us and then they pass on. Well, I sure wish I'd talked to Major Wooten. I sure wish I'd talked to Sherwin Callender. I sure wish I'd talked to Mr. Jim, you know, and found out his experience.
I've had some wonderful experience in that. As I mentioned, I think I mentioned, I've written a couple of books. I'm working on my third one right now. It's going to be called Heroes and Heroines. But my second book was dedicated to American veterans. It's called American Veterans, Their Stories of Service and Valor. My publisher's Deeds Publishing in Athens, Georgia. Army infantry colonel runs that. And I was privileged, really privileged and humble, really, to interview some of the people that I interviewed. One of them was a man from near Montgomery named Morgan Mosley. He was on the USS Indianapolis. He was a sailor. And that's the ship that took the atomic bomb over to Tinian Island to be dropped on Japan. And unfortunately, the ship sailed for the Philippines, for Leyte Gulf. And about halfway over, it was torpedoed. And there were 1,196 sailors aboard, and there were only 317 that came out alive. And this gentleman, I found him in Northwest Florida in the Panhandle, and my wife and I spent about a half a day with him, and we interviewed him, and it was fascinating. He was in the water 5 days and four nights. He lost from 205 pounds down to 160 pounds, and he does not like sharks. But he had some interesting stories. He survived because they had a medic on his raft that told him not to drink salt water because it destroys your kidneys and it causes delirium. So he intentionally did not drink water for 5 days and four nights, and that's how he survived. But some of the sailors did drink, and they became delirious. And what was really shocking to me, a lot of them had survival knives that they carried in a scabbard on their shin, and they began to see fellow sailors in the water as enemy. So they took their knives and they stabbed their fellow sailors to death. And I was really shocked to hear that. But he said, yeah, it happened. He saw it happen. And it was because it affected their mind so bad, that situation, the thirst. And he just felt very, very fortunate. But those are the type of fellows I interviewed. I interviewed Jimmy Doolittle's co-pilot. He was the last one alive, Richard Cole from Dayton, Ohio. I interviewed his daughter, Cindy. I interviewed a man from Montgomery. He was the head of the Air University at Maxwell Air Force Base. His name was Charles Chick Cleveland. He was a Korean War veteran, a fighter pilot, F-86s, and he destroyed four enemy. He shot down four that were confirmed, and he had two that he thought were probables, but he could not confirm it. And he was a graduate of West Point before he came in the Air Force. So in the Air Force, you have to have five kills to be a fighter ace. So Chick Cleveland would go to these fighter ace conventions, and he would hobnob with all the aces, but he was one short. So one of the conventions that he went to, his roommate from West Point said, Chick, I'm going to prove that you got that fifth one to make you an ace. And Chick didn't know how he was going to do it, but he said, well, have at it if you really think you can do it. So this guy that was his roommate went to the American Archives in Washington, D.C. And we had had this opening during the Reagan administration, and the Russians had, we had perestroika and glasnost, and they opened up, and they opened up a lot of their records. And what we found out was they sent a lot of their military records to the archives. So this guy went to the archives, and he researched it, and he found that on that day and that particular hour that the Russians lost that MiG that Chick Cleveland thought he had probably shot down. So they gathered all the information, and they went to the Fighter Ace Review Board, and they accepted him into the fraternity. And Fighter Ace with five kills is not something you get in very easily. But they proved, his roommate proved that he was an ace. And what was unique about it was more than 50 years after the fact, after the day that he shot him down. So anyway, that was one of the stories that was in my American Veterans book. As you were saying, we need to record these things, the history of the things that our great soldiers and airmen and Marines and sailors do for future use.
Absolutely. Right now, folks, we're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Jim James Lawrence. He is sharing some of his experience as a military member. In Andalusia, Alabama, we have the traveling Vietnam Memorial Wall that is here in Andalusia. That's why the Mark White Show is down in this area, to cover that, to honor our Vietnam veterans. And if Jim will stick with us, we'll continue this conversation on the other side. We've already talked about one book, and he has other books as well that he has written. And if you are interested in finding out more about those who served and sacrificed, and when I say sacrifice, sometimes we can use that word in such a light way, and we don't understand the depth of the sacrifice. When you think about what he described, and as hard as it is to hear that a fellow soldier did that to another soldier out in the ocean to take his life, it's a reality, and these are the reality of the sacrifices that are made by those who serve our country in this way. So if you'll stick with me, Jim, we'll continue on the other side, okay?
Okay.
Folks, I hope you'll stick with us. You are listening to The Mark White Show, and I'm your host, Mark White.
We can make a difference. All we have to do is try. Every day's a chance to change somebody else's life. Let's all do something good today.
North Alabama is full of adventure. If you love food, we've got it. If you love festivals, we've got them. If you love the outdoors, we've got plenty of places to explore. Whatever you love, we're sure to have something for you. For all things North Alabama, check out northalabama.org.
Athens Bible School is accredited by Advance Ed, a member of the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships, and is a satellite campus of Calhoun Community College. For more information, call 256-232-3525. Or visit our website at athensbibleschool.org.
With six convenient locations to serve you, Bankston Motorhomes is your local RV dealer. They have some of the top brand name RVs for sale at incredible prices. Whether you are looking for an awesome RV for a long-term road trip or a smaller or more lightweight RV for the occasional weekend getaway, Bankston Motorhomes is here to provide you with some outstanding options and deals that you just won't find anywhere else. For more information, go to BankstonMotorhomes.com or visit one of their six convenient locations in Huntsville, Florence, Warrior, Albertville, and Ardmore in Nashville, Tennessee. That's Bankston Motorhomes. For those of us who are directly responsible for the care of loved ones, we want to do the very best we can to take care of them. This is where estate planning is so important. With estate planning, you can still take care of your loved ones even when you're gone. I encourage you to make a plan by going to BamaEstatePlanning.com. Harlan Mitchell has all the tools you need to make a solid plan for your family, just like I did. That's BamaEstatePlanning.com. Make a plan and do it today.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the legal services performed by other lawyers.
This is Jacob Johnson from Marble City Pharmacy, and we've got exciting news. An all-new Marble City Pharmacy and Gift Shop is coming soon. That's right, we're getting bigger and better. We will have more space and be adding a drive-thru, and we'll still be in the same great location we are today. While the construction is happening, we'll be moving a few doors down in the same shopping center, Ogletree Plaza. But don't worry, all of our fantastic services will still be available, including in-store pickup, curbside service, and free home delivery. We can't wait for you to see our new pharmacy and gift shop. Thank you for making Marble City Pharmacy Coosa Valley's best.
The summer is heating up. Have your next backyard celebration with TNT Fireworks. TNTFireworks.com. Have safe family fun with TNT Fireworks.
This is Cora White inviting you to tune in every Saturday to Cora's Corner on The Mark White Show.
And we're back. Right now we're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Jim James Lawrence. He has been sharing with us about his military experience. He shared his background coming from the city of Op, going to Troy University as a college student, then serving in the military in the Air Force, learning how to be a pilot, and then having some experiences that are part of service to lose people that you know, people that you care about, a teammate, someone who was a neighbor. And you mentioned that the teammate, his name is on the wall here in Andalusia as it sits there in this town now to honor our veterans from Vietnam.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to come over and be part of this. I had been to the wall in Washington, but you don't have that many opportunities to come to a town like this. This is the only time this year that the traveling wall is going to be in Alabama. This is the only spot right here in Andalusia. And we're very fortunate to have that. This is a very patriotic town. I know that for a fact. There are a lot of stories being written. Mr. John Vick writes a story a week that's published in the Andalusia Star News. If he runs out of articles, he'll collaborate a little bit with me and I'll give him some ideas. Sometimes I write a few things for him. So we share things back and forth. But John is a great patriot. He was in the Navy himself, and he was not a career guy, but he was aboard two or three different ships, and I'm sorry, I can't recall the names of the ships right now, but he's a local businessman and he's taken a great interest in American veterans. They publish a magazine or two, and I think they're coming out with another one here shortly. But a lot of it's research. A lot of it's about the veterans from this county, Covington County here. And I never realized until after I retired from the Air Force, and then I worked 15 years as a civilian in the environmental business. But when I finally hung that all up, then I started doing a little bit of research about the people in this county and this state. And that's how I wrote the second book. That my first book was a memoir that I published about my own experiences. And then a few years later, I published this American Veterans book. And I had quite a few stories in there from people right in this area. One man from my hometown was class of 1953. And he went in right shortly after Pearl Harbor happened. He was in the Army. He was a military policeman. He was a personal bodyguard of the three-star General Boyd, 9th Army commander. And when Charles de Gaulle came back into Paris after it was liberated, he was one of 25 military policemen that were selected to be a special escort for Charles de Gaulle. Not only that, when they had the Nuremberg tribunals, he was a guard for the Nazis who were on trial there. And the one that he guarded was a guy named Hermann Göring, who was the head of the German Luftwaffe. He was the number two guy.
Wow.
Behind Adolf Hitler. Of course, by that time, Hitler was dead. He had committed suicide, he and his Eva Braun. But anyway, they put several of them on trial, and Charles was a guard there for him. And that was right here from my own hometown. He had played football. He was an end on the 1953 team. This man was quite helpful to me in tracking down other veterans. And one of the fellows had been the quarterback on the 1952 team, and he was he'd gone to Auburn University for a short while, and then he dropped out and went to Air Corps training, and he trained to be a P-47 Thunderbolt pilot. And what I found fascinating was that he was flying out of England, and on D-Day, he flew 6 sorties across the channel. And what was really amazing to me was he was not yet 20 years old. He was only 19 years old. He was 6 weeks shy of being 20. And if you think about that today, a fighter pilot in today's Air Force is going to be around 24 or 25 years old. This is a guy who was still a teenager, and he flew 6 sorties from Martlesham Heath over Normandy Beach and back. And he was, for a while, he was a very successful pilot. He shot down an ME-109, but later in August, he was shot down, and he was shot down by anti-aircraft fire that was mounted on the corner of a prison near Lille, France. And he had a good parachute. He bailed out because his wingman saw it. But what happened was they gunned him as he drifted down in his parachute. And some of the locals near Vitry-Artois in France, they buried him in a church cemetery. And after the war, of course, the army came in and gathered up the bodies and started identifying them and collecting dog tags and that sort of thing. And he was eventually moved to Colleville, which is the big cemetery that overlooks Normandy. But anyway, I thought he was such a heroic guy at age 19, shy of 20, and he would fly 6 combat sorties on D-Day. So I got his picture and I put it on the back of the book. He was from my hometown, and I just thought, this is really a hero. And that's the type of thing that I enjoyed writing about. But I would have never known about him had this other fellow, the one that was the guard for the Herman Guerin, Charles Saunders. I would have never known about it had he not told me, and he put me on that track to track down the data on the guy and find out about it, his family and whatnot. And what's ironic is he was listed as missing. Dwight Teal was missing for a while, and the folks who found him, the French who found him, they tracked down the family in Op. His mother, Tula Teal, and they wrote a letter in French, and somehow it made its way to Op, and the family had it, but they could not read French, and there was nobody in Op that could interpret the letter for them to tell them what they had seen that day. So they sent the letter back to the War Department, and the letter was lost. So they never knew, really. They did not ever get the exact word on what those observers had seen the day that their son was shot down. But I thought it was a fascinating story, and it's a terrible thing the War Department lost the letter.
It is, and too bad they couldn't find a French teacher in the area, someone who could have been able to do that without having to mail it back.
Yeah, but you're talking about back in the 40s. Sure. In a small town like this, you don't have a lot of people that speak French or write French. You know, it's a lot more common these days for our students to study different terms. But Howard and Tula Teal, they went to their grave, and they never really knew exactly what happened to their son, other than the fact that he did die as a result of being shot down over France.
And something you bring up that brings a really good point home about the tribute wall, the traveling wall for Vietnam veterans, is the fact that there is some closure for families at times. You putting a picture of one who was a hero, one who served on your book, they're dead and gone, but it's a legacy. And when loved ones see that their loved one is being recognized and honored, that means something.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I met the man's brother. He had a brother that was about 2 years old. He was 17 years younger, and his name was Tommy. And I met him in Northwest Florida, and they were just thrilled that I would write his story and put his picture on the back. And I also met his nephew, who's still, the brother has passed on now, but the nephew lives up in Dadeville, Alabama, and I stay in touch with him.
Very good.
Yeah. The Teal family, and they have expressed appreciation many, many times. And I just enjoy doing this type of thing. I just think it's great. The people who are in the military, they make great sacrifices. And a lot of people don't realize this, but the families make a sacrifice. The mothers back home, they worry. The fathers, the wives, if you're a wife or a spouse of somebody that's active duty in the military, you have to make a great sacrifice for that partner to be on active duty, because you have a lot of deployments, you have a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of stress. My wife went through a lot of stressful times because I was often deployed, and there were times when I could not tell her where I was going, or could not tell her what I was going to do, or how long I was going to be there. You have to trust. And she learned to fix washing machines and lawnmowers, learned to mow the grass. She learned to fix the car. It just takes a lot. And so in my third book, I'm going to have a special tribute to spouses.
Very good.
Nurses and those not always on the front line, but it's going to be a big point about how important it is for a spouse, because they sacrifice right along with the person who is the primary military member.
So very true. And Jim, I do want you to be able to share how people can find your books, because I believe we've built enough interest now for someone to look for that and to purchase a book.
Okay. My books are published by Deeds Publishing, like a good deed, Deeds Publishing in Athens, Georgia. And you can just look it up anywhere. But the first book was called Airman's Odyssey, an Air Force Special Operator's Incredible Journey. It's paperback. I don't have any hardbacks, and they're not very expensive. You can actually get them on Kindle or Nook. You can download them.
Okay.
The second book, as I mentioned earlier, was called American Veterans, Their Stories of Service and Valor, and it's the same thing out there. They're about 300 pages. The nice thing about the American Veterans book is it's broken down into 62 separate stories. It starts in the Civil War. I had an interest because my great-grandfather was in the Civil War. He was wounded at Perryville, Kentucky. He was fighting under Braxton Bragg, the Confederate general. And when he was shot in the shoulder, they had to amputate his arm. So naturally, he was dismissed. He came back to Elba, Alabama, and he raised a family of 11 children. And he was a farmer. Some friend of his rigged him up some kind of special harness so he could plow a mule with one hand. So he farmed and raised 11 children.
Wow.
And one of them was my granddad, Joe Thomas Rushing. But I started with stories like that. There was a story of a guy named Diamond Joe Ward down at Bruce, Florida, below Dufuniac Springs, and he was in the Confederate Army. And I had a relative of his told me this story, but everything, he was called Diamond Joe because he had a little brand that he would put on all his personal equipment, his farm utensils and stuff, before he went in the Confederate Army. And when he got out, he was really fed up with war. And there was, the story that was told was that as the Yankees were advancing, the rebels were retreating, and there was a group of Mississippi rebels that raided one of the gold centers that we had a stash of gold in Richmond, Virginia. So they brought it back, and they were trying to make it back to Mississippi because they were going to continue the war. And Diamond Joe Ward had had enough of war. So they had about $25,000 worth of gold, and that's a lot of money back in the 1860s. So they had this gold, and they had it on a ferry, and they were trying to board the ferry at near Dufuniac Springs, Florida, and take it back to Mississippi. So Diamond Joe Ward sabotaged the ferry without telling them, and he sank it because he'd had enough of war. So anyway, he convinced them that, I guess it was like an accidental sinking. So anyway, they gave up, and the rebels went on back to Mississippi and eventually gave up the fight without the gold. And then Diamond Joe Ward was known for being able to dive and hold his breath for a long period of time. So he dove on the wreckage, and he got all the gold, and he helped set up a school near Dufuniac Springs, Florida. And he said he had had enough of war and that he was going to devote his efforts to education. And so anyway, that's a long story short, told by a relative to me who was also named Ward. But
incredible.
I found that fascinating, that a man, he saw the bad part of war, and he said, this is enough, and we're going to stop our efforts here, and whatever I can do in the future, it'll be to educate the children and youngsters. So he devoted his efforts to that.
And that story is in your second book.
That story is in my second book, Diamond Joe Ward. It's in the Civil War section. I organized the book chronologically. I had the Civil War. And there's not that many stories because it's hard to get Civil War stories, people that know them that are still alive. And then I went to World War I, and then World War II, and then the Korean War, Vietnam, and then Iraq and Afghanistan, those wars. But that's how it's organized. The nice thing about the book is there's 62 stories, and you can, most of them are like 3, 4, 5 pages. So you can read one, and you can put the book down, and then you can come back to it later, and you can skip around if you want to.
Yes.
If you say, oh, I want to read something about World War II. World War II was the biggest because it had Charles Saunders and Dwight Teal and Noah Cohen, who was a P-51 pilot from up. When I came back from pilot training, I thought, man, I'm a big hero. I'm probably the first pilot ever from Hop, Alabama. And I was so stupid. I had no idea. All these guys had come a long way before me. They were fighter pilots and everything you could think of. But I hate
to burst your bubble, Jim.
Yeah,
but,
burst my bubble real fast, I found out. I'm walking in some big footsteps there, you know.
Right.
So anyway, but it was so much fun to dig it out and find out. And veterans from Covington County, one of them was assigned to the artillery unit here in Andalusia, National Guard. And he was part of the first artillery airdrop in Wesel, Germany, right across the Rhine. And they would drop the artillery, and then the soldiers would jump on top of it and pick it up and set it into position to fight the Germans there. And his name was Merrill Sauls, but he was from near my hometown, but he was part of the unit right here in Andalusia, the 117th. And he jumped in there, and he was wounded, shot in the back. And I said, Merrill, how in the world did you survive? And he said, I found a barn. I crawled to a barn, and I got in a horse trough, and I hid in the trough for 3 days until the American soldiers found me. And that's how he made it out alive. He was not able to continue fighting because he took a slug in the back. But it's phenomenal stories. And that's a guy from right here in Covington County, Alabama. And you just never know it until.
Wow.
And as I was writing the book, people came out of the woodwork and they say, hey, have you thought about my dad or my uncle or my granddad? And they'd start telling me these stories, and then I began researching them and started putting pen to paper. And I think we had a pretty good product by the time we did it. But the books are at Deeds Publishing in Athens, Georgia.
It's and your real, third book title?
Is going to be Heroes and Heroines.
Heroes and Heroines, and that'll be coming out your tentative?
Well, I don't. I've been working on it about a year and a half. I don't really know exactly. I'm about 2/3 of the way through. I've got about 225 or 30 pages right now. It's going to have some of the Tuskegee Airmen, second generation. I found a guy that was a fighter pilot in Vietnam, and he flew with General Chappie James, who was the first 4-star general in the Air Force. And he flew with a guy named Robin Olds. And if you've never heard of Robin Olds, get on Google and find out about Robin Olds.
How do you spell Olds?
O-L-D-S.
Olds.
Like an Oldsmobile.
Got it.
He's descended from the man named Olds who started the Oldsmobile Company. But Robin Olds was a fighter pilot in World War II. And he came right on over to the Vietnam War. And he was a genius. He had a big handlebar mustache. So he didn't always comply with grooming standards in the Air Force. But he was the commander of this outfit. He was sent there specifically because they were having losses and the morale was down, and they knew this was the right guy to lead this unit that was in Thailand. And so they were flying the F-4 Phantoms, and he set up a trick operation called Operation Bolo. You can look this up on the internet, but he tricked the North Vietnamese into thinking that they were F-105 aircraft instead of F-4 Phantoms. And when they came up to engage, they shot down about half the North Vietnamese fighters in one day. It is a very famous operation. So anyway, I found this African-American gentleman in Montgomery. I ran into him at Home Depot, and he had on this veteran's hat, cap. And I said, what'd you do, man? And he said, I was a fighter pilot in Phantoms. I said, you're kidding. Because sometimes you'd have people that really didn't do that. I started questioning him. I said, where were you? He says, I was at Karat, Thailand. I said, oh, yeah. And I said, who with? He said, the Triple Nickel, the 555th, which is the most one of the most famous fighter groups ever. I said, who'd you fly with? He said, I flew with Chappie James and Robbie Knowles. I said, this man's for real. I know.
Wow.
His name's Al Trawick. So he's going to be in it. He's a second generation Tuskegee Airman.
Very good.
Yeah. But I confirmed it. I went to the Tuskegee Airmen Foundation, and I talked to the man down in Mobile that runs it. I said, hey, what do you know about Al Trawick? He said, he's for real. So he's in my next book, Heroes and Heroines. And he was very elderly when I talked to him. You know, he was several years older than me. But I just ran into him at Home Depot. He was buying something to work on, and I was doing the same thing. But I'm real bad about talking to people. My wife says it's a fault. But when I saw his hat, I said, there might be a story there.
It's like a guy with a radio show. We have to talk.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm excited about it. I met a gal named Signe Dahl, and she was a nurse. And she married a guy that was wounded in World War II. And she met him in the hospital because she was taking care of him. And she eventually married the guy. He had been wounded. So anyway, I'm trying to focus in that area, talk about people that just made so many contributions to the country. You know, it's very, very important thing for us.
Absolutely. And I hope listeners who have been listening to Lieutenant Colonel Jim James Lawrence will check out the books, check out the material, and find out more about our veterans, the sacrifices that they have made, and these stories, which if you don't capture the stories at the time that these individuals are living, you miss it, because that's the firsthand story. That is where you're going to get the facts. And history can be helpful in the books that we have in school, but it also can be skewed and sometimes not exact. But it is good to get it from those who had that firsthand experience. What I was going to tell you was I had a conversation with one of the Tuskegee Airmen, Mr. Leon Creighton. He's from Hillsboro, Alabama. He celebrated his 88th birthday this year. And he actually, with his uncle's encouragement, who was a World War II veteran, he graduated from Decatur High School, and then in 53, graduated high school, then attended Tuskegee Institute on a scholarship. And he followed the first generation of airmen in 1941. He was a Korean War veteran and served from 55 to 59 and then 61 to 74 in the Air Force Reserves. So that was a great conversation to be able to have with Mr. Leon Creighton not too long ago.
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, I consider it important.
Me too.
To capture these stories because they're gone. Once they pass on, there's a great deal of information that's lost from them to their children and then their grandchildren, because most of them just don't know the details. The best thing is to talk to the veteran themselves if you can, because they know. Their long-term memory is great. Sometimes they can't remember where their car keys are, but I tell you what, they will remember what happened when they were in combat or when they were in training. They never forget that.
And when I say the 305th Aerospace Rescue and Recovery Squadron, based in Selvridge Air Force Base in Detroit, helping the squadron find downed pilots, are you familiar?
I'm familiar with the 304th in Portland, Oregon, because my co-pilot in Japan became a member of that. It was a guard unit. His name is Jim Aslan. I've been trying to track him down, but he was my co-pilot. And I'm sure it's a very, very similar unit, C-130s. I found things online about where he would participate in a rescue. They had one that went down, and they had the emergency signal, and they diverted them, and they went over and located the wreckage and that sort of thing. But
that's what Mr. Creighton was doing with the 305th.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it's a very similar unit. We have a lot of different ones. I was in the 55th Aerospace Rescue and Recovery Squadron at Eglin Air Force Base when I flew search and rescue. It was part of the 39th Wing. And we had HC-130s. We had a special dome on top of the aircraft, and it had electronic gear that could pick up these emergency locator transmitters. When a plane crashes, it sets it off. so we could home in on it and go to it. And we had four of those aircraft, and we were the first squadron in the Air Force to get the H-60 Black Hawk. When they came into the Air Force inventory, we had nine of those.
What year was that?
I was there. I went to the 55th Squadron in 1983, and I was there until the summer of 1987. I was there about 3.5 years, but I was flying the fixed wing. It's a real interesting plane to fly. It has pods mounted under the wing and a hose reel assembly, and you can run a hose out under each wing, and it extends out 91 feet, and then the helicopters can plug in, and you flip the switch, and you fill them up with fuel. You refuel them in flight. So it was fascinating. The Blackhawks, when we first got them, they replaced the H-3, which was kind of outdated. But when we got those Blackhawks, they were not in-flight refuelable capable. But we took them one at the time and took them to Sikorsky at Troy, Alabama. They have a place there, and they modified each airplane and put the probes on it so that we could refuel them in flight. So by 1987, the ones that we had in the squadron, they were all in-flight refuelable.
What a huge change.
Yes, it's a big thing because you don't have to stop. You just schedule your tanker to be at a certain rendezvous point at a particular time, and you fly right by him, and then he plugs in and gets his fuel, and he can keep going. He doesn't have to land. Because, unfortunately, when you land, sometimes airplanes don't want to start up again the next time things go wrong. But it really is a time saver. And if you've got a long-range rescue mission or something like that, it's really good that you can do that in-flight refueling and just keep booking right on down the line.
Lieutenant Colonel Jim James Lawrence, it's been great to have this conversation with you here in Andalusia today. It means a lot to me to have you sitting here and sharing in the way that you are, and I know that there are listeners out there who appreciate this conversation as well.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's nice to meet you, and I really appreciate you having such an interest in this subject.
Well, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you for being here today.
Glad to do it. Folks, here on the Mark White Show, we're recognizing difference makers like those who have served our country, and today we honor them through the Mark White Show, whatever era they served in. Just know that there are huge sacrifices that have been made, and any chance, any opportunity we have to honor these heroes, let's do that. Let's honor them. There are organizations out there that you can support. Covington Veterans Foundation, honoring veteran legacies, all of these various organizations. Find one. Plug into it. Find veterans. Show them your appreciation for what they did while they're still here. We're losing a lot of our veterans, as mentioned in this conversation. Agent Orange is taking a lot of our Vietnam veterans very quickly, quicker, much more so than our World War II veterans or our Korean veterans because of what Agent Orange does to them. So you find those veterans and you show your appreciation. I want you to share this show with your family, your friends, and your neighbors and let them know about the Mark White Show and what we're doing to make a difference in our communities around the country and the world. I want you to follow the Mark White Show on Facebook and Instagram and subscribe to the Mark White Show podcast wherever you get your podcast. You have been listening to another edition of the Mark White Show on location in Andalusia, Alabama, and this is Mark White, encouraging you to find your purpose by making a difference in someone's life today.
There are moments in life you wish you could capture forever. Alabama the Beautiful is a new online magazine that preserves images from sweet home Alabama. Yours anytime, online, every month, where the eye captures the moment and it really does last forever.
Be sure to check out alabamathebeautifulmagazine.com.
Thompson Roofing and Construction is a locally owned family business serving the North Alabama and Southern Tennessee area. They are a Better Business Bureau A-plus member since 2011 and a GAF Master Elite Contractor. Give them a call at 256-952-3309 or check them out on the web at 256roofing.com. They offer free inspections.
Thompson Roofing and Construction.
Mr. Cecil Batchelor is the one that started this business as Dependable Service Center. And even though now it's Green's Dependable Hardware and we're a True Value store, our tagline is still your Dependable Service Center. We've tried to keep that alive for all these years. Mr. Batchelor really started a good business. We're really excited to be carrying on a long-standing tradition. It's the oldest retail store in the city of Russellville. We're Green's Dependable Hardware, 15220A Highway 43 in Russellville, Alabama. We're right behind McDonald's or right across the street from the hospital. Number is 256-331-0123.
Your Dependable Service Center.
Is it time for a haircut? Give my friend Philip Butler at Southwind Barbershop a call, located in Rogersville, Alabama. You can call him at 256-247-5658. Make an appointment or just walk in. That's Southwind Barbershop in Rogersville, Alabama.
Looking for direction in this volatile market? Contact Brad Wallace, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor, on Hughes Road in Madison, Alabama. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Member SIPC.
People who shout a friendly hi when they go passing by, who live and love in my hometown. Ah, these are my kind of people.